So Luke, Ray, I have a question for you.
Okay.
Sure.
What is my least favorite movie of all time?
I'm gonna have to go with The Notebook.
No, not The Notebook. Luke?
I'm gonna guess it's all three of the Human Centipede movies, 1, 2, and 3, are collectively your least favorite movie of all time.
Those aren't even worthy of being on.
Okay.
My least favorite movie of all time is a Netflix original movie called Bushwick. Have either of you heard of this movie?
I've definitely heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
I've only heard of it because you told me about it at work one time, and that's it.
Okay, but you know what movie is at near the bottom of my list?
What's that, Tyler?
Brightburn.
Oh.
Which just so happens to be the topic of this week's episode. So that being said, hello, welcome to episode 2 of the Cinebros podcast. This is our first debate episode where me and Luke will be debating whether or not Brightburn is a good movie. Obviously, I think Brightburn is a terrible movie, and Luke will be trying to convince me otherwise. Ray will be the moderator of this debate, which means he will pick a winner at the end. Ray, since you are the moderator, do you want to tell us a bit how the debate is going to work?
I would love to. So, the beginning of our debate will start with an opening argument of the film, then it will be followed by 3 rounds. Round 1 being the writing, the 2 will discuss the writing, round 2 will be the directing, and then round 3 will be the acting. After round 3, both of them will give a closing argument, and then I will pick a winner. Simple enough?
I think so.
Yep, sounds good to me.
All right, so before we get into the debate, Ray, I understand you've done some homework from last episode.
Correct.
What was that, Ray?
I actually watched Arrival. Luke was trying to get me to watch Heather. Is it Heather's? Heather? Heather's?
Heather's, yeah.
Heather's. He was trying to get me to watch it, and then I just decided to watch Arrival instead, and it was probably the greatest decision I ever made.
So, Ray, what do you think of the movie?
I thought it was amazing. Great acting, great directing, great writing, great concept for a movie. I don't think I've ever seen an alien movie done that well before.
I definitely agree with that. It is the best
alien movie you've seen. Like any other alien movies, the alien is usually the villain.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And in this movie, it brings a whole different outlook on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that movie, and I'm glad you liked it.
It's great, yes.
It is really good, yeah. I would still watch Heather's whenever you get the chance. You would probably think it was pretty funny, probably.
Yeah, me and you have kind of similar tastes. More similar than me and Tyler.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I need to watch Heather's too. Maybe I'll do that for next episode too.
Yeah, we'll both give it a watch, probably.
Nice.
All right, but that being said, Luke, are you ready to go? Are you ready to debate?
I'm ready. Yep, let's do this thing.
All right, I have my page of notes here. Luke, do you have yours?
I do.
All right, so I guess this means it's time for me to take over?
Yep, Ray, you can pick who will speak first.
All right, Tyler, I would like to hear your opening argument of why you, I guess, hate Brightburn.
Yes, I hate it.
Okay, let's hear it.
I can sum it up in 4 words, okay?
Okay.
The movie is trash.
Okay, wow. I'm going to need some more behind that.
Okay, so I was super hyped for this movie, okay?
Okay.
The concept is so good. It's evil Superman produced by James Gunn of Guardians of Galaxy fame.
You know, Tyler, when I was watching the trailer, I thought the exact same thing.
How hard is it to mess up such a cool concept with the writer-director of Guardians of the Galaxy?
That is a very good argument.
But you know what? They messed it up. The movie is awful. It's terrible. The writing is atrocious. The acting is an abomination. It's so bad. It's just so bad. That's my opening argument. The movie is trash.
Okay, good argument. Luke?
All right, so me and Tyler, fun fact, actually watched this movie together in theaters, when it came out.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, we were both really excited about it. Like you said, the premise is awesome, but the movie definitely squanders its premise. That's probably the worst part about it, is that he's right. It doesn't take advantage of its premise. I don't think it totally messes it up. I think that it's a small budget movie. The budget was between $6 million and $12 million, and I think that the special effects actually ended up looking pretty good for a movie with that low budget, because like you said, James Gunn had a lot, was the producer, and his brothers Mark and Brian wrote it, so they have a lot of experience with low budget filmmaking and stuff before Guardians of the Galaxy came out. So the effects look pretty good. I actually think that most of the acting isn't that great. I think it's serviceable.
I disagree.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah, I think that the parents are actually pretty good, but It's not a great movie. I think it's okay. I mean, it's worth the watch if you just want to see some gory violence, but it does squander its premise. So it could have been done a lot better. I don't hate it, though. Tyler obviously disagrees. So that is my opening argument.
Your argument wasn't doing much for me there until the end, because most people who know me know that I'm a casual movie watcher.
Right.
And for me at the end, you sold it there by saying that if you just want to, you know, sit back and watch something mindlessly, you can watch it and it would be a decent watch. So right. You definitely sold it there for me.
Well, thanks.
And the low budget. The low budget argument sold it for me as well.
All right, but here's the thing about the low budget argument, okay? Having a budget does not excuse horrible writing. It can excuse the acting, it can excuse special effects, you know, marketing, anything like that. But to me, having a low budget does not excuse your story being bad. And their dialogue is awful. The plot structure makes no sense, to be honest. And to me, that cannot be excused by the budget.
Okay. So I'm going to write down my winner for the opening argument right now.
Okay.
And I've got that. So we're good to go on to round one, where the two will be arguing over the writing, beginning with Tyler.
Okay. So the writing is obviously bad from literally the first scene in the film. So Luke, have you watched this recently? Do you remember what the first scene in the movie is?
I do. Yeah. The husband and the wife are about to try to have a kid, right? That's what they're trying to do. And then as they are about to do that, that's when the ship lands in the field, right?
Yes, it is. And Luke, do you remember any of the dialogue that goes on in that scene?
Yeah, not specific lines, but I remember it was a little cringe inducing.
Oh, okay, because I've written down a specific line, okay?
Okay, I'd love to hear it. Go ahead.
And Ray, you've not seen this movie, correct?
Correct.
So this is going to be your first little intro into the writing of this movie, okay? So this is an actual line that is said by the husband to his wife as they are having sex. Maybe this time we get lucky and make a baby.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's kind of atrocious.
Yes. And then it just gets worse. They start going at it. And then the wife just immediately interrupts going, ow, just ow. And then the husband says, oh, it's my watch. Stupid watch. And so he takes off his watch, which he should have already had off. He's in bed. And then they get going at it again. And oh no, they stop again. There's an earthquake.
But no, oh gosh.
But no, it's a spaceship that's crashed in the yard. Scene ends and goes on to a next scene. That's the first little bit of the movie.
Hmm. Okay, that is a very good argument against bad writing for the movie, Tyler.
But no. I'm not done. That's just the little intro, okay? So the next scene, it does a little montage of them going through home videos of their baby, right? Well, the baby came from outer space, and the movie doesn't address this until midway through the movie. It just kind of happens, and you're left to assume that the baby came from the spaceship. It does not show the parents going to get the child from the spaceship until way, way later in the movie. So there's that.
Okay, but maybe they meant to leave it open for the viewer to believe that the baby came from space.
See, I would argue that didn't even have to be shown at all. I feel like we should have known that. I don't understand why they waited until halfway through the movie, like you said, to show that. But at the same time, I don't know if they really needed to show that at all, because I think we already kind of knew that.
Okay, yes, we did know that. But that's just an intro into the many, many, many other times the movie just skips around scenes without finishing the storyline. So let me get into some more, okay? So the movie establishes that Brandon Breyer, whatever his name is, who is the main kid, is very, very intelligent. And because of that, he's bullied in school, right? And if we're going on character motivations, that's basically the only character motivation his character has, is that he's bullied in school. So skips around a few more times, and then it's night, right? And it shows Brandon sleeping and his mom up. She's painting, and the barn all of a sudden starts glowing red and making some noise, right? Well, Brandon, he gets out of bed. He's drawn to this noise, and he goes to the barn, and he starts repeating the words and stuff that are being emitted by the spaceship, which they keep in their barn for whatever reason. I don't know why you would keep a random piece of spacecraft in your barn for 11 years or how often. I would have just left that where it fell, called a government agency, the Men in Black, But no, these parents decided to keep a spaceship for 11 years in their barn, locked underneath it in this little chamber thing. Which, by the way, did I mention they got their son from this spacecraft, and they just, you know, decided to keep this spacecraft around. So the mom discovers her son in the barn messing with this spaceship, right? Well, she wakes him up, right? She thinks he's just sleepwalking. He agrees with her. Well, they go back inside the house, and, you know, the dad asks, "What up?" And the mom doesn't think it's important enough that her son was talking to a spaceship that they kept in their barn for 11 years that all of a sudden started glowing red and reciting some sort of demonic chant that their son recited. She doesn't think this is important enough information to tell her husband. She just brushes it off and they all go to sleep.
Okay, but here's now, yeah, so we're getting into where I agree with you some. I think that the mother, Elizabeth Banks, is a good actress, and I think she does okay for the material she's given, but I think that she is written to be the absolute most unlikable person in the movie. I like her less than I like the murderous evil child, I think.
Because so Tyler,
she's written so poorly in it.
Yes,
Tyler, your argument for the writing is that it leaves plot holes, is what I got from what you just said.
My argument with the writing is not that it creates plot holes, but it almost never fully establishes a scene. For the most part, the movie, it either starts a storyline and immediately abandons it until later, or it'll start a storyline, get to the climax, and then cut away, or the scene will progress, and right before, you know, it's at a point where you can go like, okay, scene, that is a scene right there. It will just end. That is my argument for the writing.
Okay, I've heard enough from you, Tyler. I'm ready to hear Luke's argument.
Okay.
So, the writing, I will agree. I think personally that the writing is the worst part of the movie. If the script was a little better or a lot better, then I think this movie would actually be pretty good. I still think it's an okay movie, but if the writing was better, that would obviously enhance it quite a bit. But like Tyler was saying, there are some cringeworthy moments of dialogue for sure. I don't know why they tell things out of order. And I do think Elizabeth Banks is a really good actress. Her performance is one of my favorite things in the movie. But I think that
this round isn't based on acting, Lucas.
I know.
More of writing.
I know.
I will let you get more into it, though.
No, I say that to say that her acting is good, but her character is written to be so unlikable that it's just, she's so unlikable, and there are all these obvious signs that, hey, my son might be evil. This alien that we adopted as our own and hid all kinds of things about his past from him might be evil. When, like Tyler says, they see the floating, she sees him floating and reciting this demonic alien chant or whatever, doesn't tell her husband, and then he brutally injures this classmate of his, and she doesn't say anything, or she's totally on his side and just, it's just so oblivious to how evil he is, or maybe she doesn't want to believe it, I don't know, but the writing for her character, I think, sinks the whole thing. I think her character is written the worst of any character. I think some parts are okay. I actually think the husband is written pretty well. He's like the only believable character in the entire movie for me, but the writing isn't very good. So I don't think it's as bad as Tyler said it is, but I think that it is still not very good. And they tried to play, and it's also, real quick, I'm almost done, it almost gets bogged down with horror cliches. It tries to play this concept of an evil Superman, which is a really awesome concept, as just a straight horror movie, which for some might work, people who just want to watch a gory horror movie for 90 minutes and be entertained. But for me, I was wanting the premise to be explored more than it was. So I think that the writing is the weakest part of the movie. So that's my argument.
Okay, now Ray, can I chip in on something that Luke just said?
Go ahead.
Okay, so he brought up the classmate, right, that is brutally injured by the boy.
Yes.
Let me explain a little bit about how that came to be. So another big problem I have with the writing in the movie is that Brandon, the main character, is evil for the sake of being evil. There is no, like, inciting incident that makes him evil other than the spaceship is evil. Like, to me, that's not enough. He should have realized that he had some supernatural abilities and, you know, started exploring around a bit. And then something just awful happened that made him turn evil. But the way the movie actually handles his turn to evilness, if you will, is he is mowing some grass, right? And all of a sudden he throws the lawnmower, okay? Just across the yard. He goes up and he like decides it's a good idea to stick his hand in the blades of the lawnmower.
I believe I remember seeing this clip in the trailer.
Yeah, yes. It's in the trailer.
So after that, there's, I can't remember if there's another scene after that or not, but it switches to the parents, right? And they discover porn in his bedroom, okay? And
okay.
For no logical reason, like there's nothing building up to him all of a sudden having a sexual awakening other than just the movie wants it to. Well, they then decide that it's an appropriate time to have the birds and the bees talk with their son. You know, fair enough. So the dad takes him on a hunting trip, right? And what precedes is the most awkward birds and the bees conversation I have ever seen in my life. Luke, would you agree with that at least?
I mean, it's awkward, but that's intentional. I actually thought that scene was pretty funny because the dad obviously hasn't ever done that before, talked to a kid about that before. So, I thought that was pretty funny. It drug on a little bit too long, and it wasn't as funny as I think maybe the screenwriters thought it was because that scene lasted too long. But I don't know. I didn't mind that scene as much, I guess.
Okay. But anyway, from that scene, the next scene is Brandon. He can fly now, apparently. That's not set up anyway. He can just fly. He flies to the home of one of his classmates, who is like the only person in the movie that's his age-wise has been shown to be nice to him, right? And he just like stands in her window, right? Just stalking her, right? Well, she wakes up, she calls her mom, and well, Brandon has to go away, right? Well, later, just a few minutes later, there's another scene in which all the kids are playing a game in like gym on the playground, right? And Brandon breaks this girl's wrist. Again, for no reason. Like, yes, she like thinks it's weird that he was staying outside her window and she calls him out on it because, again, he's standing outside her window.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, that's a little weird, bro.
A little, yeah.
Yeah, he breaks her wrist and then, like, all the moms get mad. And his mom defends mm-hmm. her son for breaking this little girl's wrist.
Yeah, going back to the mom, she's the worst.
Okay, but if that is your kid, wouldn't you be trying to defend him too before you knew the whole story?
But you know what?
But,
yes.
But Ray, here's the thing, though, and I can't believe I'm agreeing with Tyler on this, but her hand, I mean, he didn't just hurt her. Her hand was like completely crushed. Yeah. So in a normal case, if she had like broken her wrist maybe or something, I could understand the mom defending him more. But her hand is completely mangled. She was very quick to just be like, oh, no, he didn't mean anything by it. I stand by my son. So I agree with Tyler on that.
Okay. I think I've heard enough from the writing standpoints from both of you.
Okay.
Are you guys ready to move into round two? Which will be the directing?
I think I am, yes.
Yeah.
And this time, do you want to start with Luke or do you want to keep going with Tyler first?
Luke can start this round.
All right, okay. Luke, go ahead.
All right. Now, to preface this, I'm not going to pretend like I know more about the technical side of filmmaking than Tyler does. But I will say that, you know, and the actual directing and the editing is pretty poor. Shots are kind of strung together, you know, not very well. It was directed by a guy named David Yaroveski, I think is how you say his last name. He's only made one other movie, a science fiction horror movie called The Hive, and back in 2014. And that movie also was not very well received by critics. I think it has like a 30 on Rotten Tomatoes or something. So, you know, probably not the, I don't want to say he's a bad filmmaker, but the two movies he's made so far haven't really sold me on his directing ability. But I'm going to spend this time, and he's right, the editing isn't very good in this movie, and I'm sure he'll expand on the editing and the directing and shot structure and everything. But I will say, I'm going to spend some time talking about the production a little bit. Because as I mentioned, James Gunn comes from a background of very, very low-budget filmmaking. He made a movie called Super with Rainn Wilson back in 2010 that's pretty funny. It's a little disturbing, but I mean, it's pretty funny, but that's a pretty small budget, smaller budget than this movie. And this movie having like the $6 to $12 million range of a budget. The special effects, I thought, actually ended up looking very good. And I think that's my favorite part of the movie. When he flies, at least for me, Tyler might not agree, but I think when he flies, it looks convincing. The heat vision that he uses looks convincing. And like I talked about earlier in my opening argument, There's a lot of gory violence in it that I didn't expect at all. And it doesn't really factor into anything about halfway through the movie. We get about halfway through the movie and I'm still thinking, why is this movie rated R exactly? Because there hasn't been a lot of cussing. There's been like the sex talk and all kinds of stuff like that, but nothing too intense. And then he goes to this diner because Tyler mentioned this is after he crushed the girl's hand. And that girl's mom obviously understandably freaked out when this happened, right? And was like, I don't want you anywhere near my daughter again. So he finds out that that girl's mom works at a diner. So he goes to the diner, tracks her down, psychologically messes with her, and then ends up killing her. And it cuts away before he kills her. But he breaks glass. He breaks glass in this diner she's in, and the shard of glass lands in her eye.
Yeah, I think they showed that in the trailer as well. And I remember seeing that, and that scene alone, made me a little bit interested in the movie at least.
Oh yeah, I mean it's super graphic and disturbing, and it focuses on it. I've got a couple friends of mine who like movies as well. Probably not as much as we do, but they enjoy them. But anytime an eye gets hurt, it wigs them out. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people are like, yeah, because her eyes, because yeah, her eyes are.
I feel like that's for anyone.
Yeah, but that scene, it might go on a little too long, but the effect of her pulling it out of her eye, actually did some research, which actually a practical effect, and I thought it looked pretty good. Like I said, all these special effects look good. The spaceship looked good whenever he's hovering, like Tyler was talking about, and kind of weird alien chant was going on, and it was glowing red, and he was levitating. All of that looks good, and the gore looks real. So even though the directing aspect, which is what this category is called, isn't that impressive, I felt like the production of the movie was probably the best thing about it, that the special effects were handled well. And if you like gory horror movies, which I do, you'll probably find some enjoyment in it. So that is my argument about this. Tyler, I know you know a lot more about the actual technical side of filmmaking, but I don't know. I didn't mind the direction and the special effects as much. So you can go ahead, Tyler.
Okay. So the directing of this movie is fine. Like, of the three categories that we are going to discuss about this movie, writing, directing, and acting, the directing is the part I have the least problem with, but that doesn't mean that I have no problems with the directing. So, as the director of the movie, your control over the film kind of varies project to project, studio to studio, who you're working with, etc., right? This is a movie that one of my biggest problems with was I feel like I was misled by the advertising. This movie was heavily advertised as like James Gunn's Brightburn, right?
And Tyler, you make that argument about the being misled by the advertising.
Yes.
Which is a good argument, because the only thing that I'm led by in this is solely the advertising of the movie.
Yes. And like, the entire time they're like hyping up like James Gunn's Brightburn, like James Gunn, James Gunn, James Gunn. Well, James Gunn produced it. He didn't write it and he didn't direct it. His brothers wrote it, but James Gunn himself did not direct it. And, like I said, it varies on filmmakers, but like normally if you're going to like advertise a movie based on a particular person in its production, that person would normally be the director, not the producer. And, like Luke said, the director of it, he had only made like one movie before. And, correct, he is buddy with the Guns, which is why he was chosen to direct it. But for me, the fact that the advertising team at Sony relied so heavily on the James Gunn factor shows to me that they didn't really have a lot of faith in being able to sell the product without his name attachment. It's kind of hilarious to me, given that it's a dark Superman story, which it should be so easy. I don't know how much control the director had over this movie, given that the Guns pretty much controlled the whole thing. I know he didn't write it, so I'm going to try not to critique him for his writing. But from an actual directing standpoint, I think that, as Luke mentioned earlier, he fell too far into like horror movie cliches. As the director, he's kind of the one that's kind of like determining how he wants the movie to look, how he wants the scenes to play out, and all this kind of stuff. And I feel that at times in the movie, he decides to just go gore for the sake of gore and, like shock factor as opposed to like actual substance. So there's a scene in the movie where Brandon kills his aunt and uncle, and he kills his uncle as he's driving away from his house where he's just murdered his aunt. And he flies in front of the car and flips the car, and obviously the uncle does not survive because it's a pretty brutal car wreck. But the special effect of the uncle's death is the uncle's jaw is like hanging down, like just blood and gore. His jaw is on the ground, basically, literally on the ground. And Luke, would you say that special effect looked good to you?
You know, it's not the most impressive of the special effects in the movie. I thought it looked fine. It looked pretty good considering the budget. I expected it to look a lot worse. So, I mean, I was okay with it. It could have been done better.
Like, to me, it was one of those things that I could tell was a special effect. Like, it did not look realistic at all to me. And, you know, they don't have a big budget, so I'm not trying to critique their budget shortfalls in their prop design and, like, their special effects. But, you know, as a director, like, he obviously showed throughout the movie that he didn't care to, like, cut scenes at a particular point. So, like, you could have saved some budget by just having the car crash and then that being it. But instead, he decided to go with this, like, extreme gross-out special effect just for the sake of having an extreme gross-out special effect. You know, it didn't end up serving any purpose. Like, it was just there to shock the audience. And, you know, Luke, you mentioned earlier with, like, the shard of glass in the eye. Didn't need to happen. Like, there was no point other than just shocking the audience. And I know this is supposed to be a horror movie, so, like, you're trying to scare the audience, but to me, this movie was not even close to a horror movie, honestly. I feel like this movie had an identity crisis of what it wanted to be, whether it wanted to be, like, a supervillain movie or, like, a horror movie or some sort of other movie. And I think a lot of that would fall on the director for not being able to pinpoint what style of movie he wanted to make. The horror elements in the movie, I feel, are just kind of shoehorned in. Like, oh, here, we advertise it as a horror movie, so here, have some horror elements. Here, have a jaw hanging on the floor or a shard of glass in the eye. And, like, there are some just random jump scares that are there for no reason. You know, I hate jump scares in horror movie. I think they're so cheap. And I honestly, it cheapens movie experience for me if I see just, like, a random jump scare in a movie that doesn't need it. And that happens a few times in this
movie. But you do have to think, a lot of people do, you know, live for the jump scares. A lot of people only like to go see scary movies only for the jump scares.
Right. A lot of people love that. That was purely done to draw in an audience, and it wasn't needed for the film, but I think it makes it at least more exciting. You know, if those weren't in there, it would be substantially more boring than it is. And I know that, you know, you're right. I mean, it is a lot of style over substance, and the gory stuff wasn't needed. The eye scene wasn't needed. You know, the car flipping over and the jaw popping off definitely wasn't needed. But, you know, I'm kind of glad it was there just because, you know, it surprises you with how gory it ends up being. And I think that that can make it more entertaining and can draw more people in, I think. But you're right, it didn't need to be in there. And the movie's biggest problem is this identity crisis of, you know, they want it to kind of be a straight horror movie, even though it shouldn't have been. But I would argue that those gory scenes, while not necessary, didn't detract from the movie at all.
You see, okay. I kind of disagree, because I think they did detract from the movie, because to me, if you're going to have a jump scare or, like, supreme gore in your movie, you have to earn it. Like, you have to earn it with your setup to those scenes and, like, all this stuff. So I'm going to use an example from a horror director that I love, Ari Aster. In both of his movies, Hereditary and Midsommar, there are two scenes in each movie. There's the car scene in Hereditary and then the cliff scene in Midsommar that are very, very gory. But Aster's buildup to those scenes, he deserved those. That's like the showing of the gore. Like, he set up, like, the audience anticipation for, like, the reveal of what happened. Where I feel in Brightburn, there was no setup, really. There was just the gore happened. Like, it didn't earn its gore or, like, its jump scares. It was just thrown in there to get some sort of audience reaction, which to me, I have a problem with.
Well, just to end it, I mean, I definitely see where Tyler's coming from, and it wasn't earned, you know, for sure, like he was saying. The gore wasn't earned or anything. There wasn't really much of a purpose for it other than drawing people in, but I don't know. I kind of, coming from more so of a regular movie watcher a little bit, I think that the gore hitting you over the head and coming out of nowhere, I think, kind of enhanced the experience just because it was so surprising. You know, it wasn't earned and there was no build up to it. It just kind of happened. But I thought that that made it a little bit more exciting. Kind of made me go, oh, wow. So I got the reaction the filmmakers wanted. But you're right, it wasn't earned, but I didn't really think it needed to be. But that's all I have to say about it.
Okay, good arguments from both of you for round two. Probably the hardest round I've had to pick the winner in so far. But now we'll be going into round three, where the two will be debating the acting.
Okay.
We'll start with Tyler this time.
Okay, so the acting, right? The acting. If not the writing, the acting to me is the worst part of this movie. All of the actors, I think, are terrible. All of them. There is not a single actor in the movie that I think did a good job or that was worthy of their name and reputation. You know, Luke, you mentioned earlier that Elizabeth Banks is in the movie. She's a fairly big-name actress, right?
Right.
She's terrible in this movie. She really is. And, you know, acting and writing often goes hand in hand, you know, with like the Star Wars prequels. You'd say like the acting was good, but the writing was terrible, so the acting suffered as a result. I think that kind of goes the same with this movie. You know, the writing was bad, so thus the acting was bad. But so I have some scenes here that I'm just going to call out for the acting.
So, Tyler, I have a question for you before you start to say this.
Yes, go for it.
Did you watch this movie recently?
Yes, I just rewatched it.
Okay. That makes more sense now.
Me and Luke both rewatched it in order to make notes for this episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
My opinions on it have not changed, and I hold the same opinions rewatching it that I do watching it the first time.
Okay.
So, obviously, the intro scene, right, where they're having sex and, you know, they're trying to make a baby, right?
Yeah.
It was the most There was absolutely no chemistry between the leads at all. Like, none whatsoever. They were so awkward sounding, right? And, you know, just given, like, the dialogue given, you know, the husband saying, oh, maybe we get lucky this time, make a baby, that implies they've had sex multiple times. They're married, after all. So there was no chemistry there whatsoever. It was like watching two 12-year-olds try to have sex. Like, there was...
Right. And it was important to have chemistry between your two main characters.
Especially if you're having, like, such an intimate scene like that.
Yeah.
So that's a scene, right? I think the biggest problem acting-wise is the dad, honestly. Like, Luke, wow. I know you mentioned earlier that you think the dad's awful. But the dad, to me, in the movie, is just dumb. Like, he is just played up as an idiot. And, like, his actor does nothing to change that. You know,
that's where we disagree the most, I think. But go ahead. Keep going.
So, like, the dad, throughout the time, is just kind of a passenger. The mom is really the one kind of driving the whole plots with the son forward, right? And the dad is just kind of having to sit in the background. And I don't know if that's because the actor was just kind of judged as, like, not a big enough name or not on the talent level of Elizabeth Banks. But there are several scenes, you know, where he basically is just there. He's like, oh, what's up? What's going on? And then they just, like, go past him anyway. And, you know, that scene with, like, the birds and the bees talk is, again, so awkward. There's absolutely zero chemistry between the dad and the son. And, you know, you could make the argument that it's just because that scene is meant to be awkward. That's an awkward conversation to have. But there are several other scenes. So, like, there's a scene where Brandon has his 12th birthday party in the diner. And his aunt and uncle gift him a hunting rifle.
Yep.
And the dad kind of freaks out on him. He's like, oh, he's too young for that. Multiple times throughout the movie, the dad has taken this kid hunting and given him a rifle. So that's kind of like a hypocrisy to get mad at that moment, making a big deal of giving a rifle when you've literally just taken him hunting.
Well, that sounds
more like a writing problem.
And, you know, right. That's the thing, you know, like, how much can you say that the acting is bad when they're not giving them anything to work with? And to me, the thing is, like, there is no chemistry between the leads. And I think this category is going to tie up all of my critiques together, like, you know, writing, directing, and acting. To me, the acting is kind of an accumulation of everything going wrong. The script is not strong at all to start with, so they don't have much to work with. The director is weak in that he can't get his actors to kind of form chemistry. And the actors themselves are weak because they cannot form chemistry with each other enough to make their scenes realistic. Like, at no point in the movie to me does it feel like this is an actual married couple with their son who is trying to parent him accordingly. Elizabeth Banks's character is so shady, you know, the entire time. She doesn't let her husband in on anything. Her husband is way too passive for the entire time. Like, he barely shows any emotion throughout the scene, throughout the movie, I mean. And the son, you know, Luke, I think you mentioned on episode one that you can't really judge a movie by its child actors.
Right.
But as a director, you have to guide your child actors to giving a good performance. And I don't feel like that was done at all with this movie. Like the child
acting. That seems like a directing problem again with the acting.
Yeah, and you know, this category is to me, it's going to be an accumulation of all of the problems because acting ties in a lot with directing and writing. So I'm going to be calling back a lot to writing and directing when I'm discussing it. But like the child actors in this, they feel like child actors. And that may be an unfair criticism, you know, because they are young, but it takes away my immersion when you obviously have kids in like their first movie role or like second movie role, and they just kind of feel like they're reading from the script or just kind of like, what's a good way to put it? Just kind of like there for the ride. And to me, like all the child actors in the movie feel that way. There is no real moment where any of the child actors sold me on their role. You know, even like the main character, Brandon, you know, if you're going to have a child actor, you better make sure the one playing the lead is pretty good, right? But to me, he's just so weak of an actor. And really, that's my argument. Really, like the actors have no chemistry with each other. They deliver their lines, albeit the lines are written poorly. They deliver them even more poorly. The children actors, I don't buy at all. So that's what I have to say about acting.
All right. Okay. Luke, on to you now.
All right. So Tyler, yeah, that was a pretty good argument. In my opinion, I think that most of the acting ranges from like serviceable to pretty bad. I will agree with you that the main character, the young actor who plays Brandon, Jackson Dunn is his name. He's not very good at all. He's probably the weakest actor in the movie, which is a problem because he is the main character in the film. But like, you know, I think my argument still stands from the first episode, how I don't think you can really judge. I just personally don't feel comfortable. Maybe I'll say it like this. You can judge a movie by its child actors because there have been movies with amazing child performances, but yeah, I don't really,
Logan, I don't, just a few examples.
Right, yeah. I just don't personally feel comfortable doing that because, you know, I feel like he could maybe get better soon. And, you know, I feel like, again, the directing and the writing wasn't very strong. So that had a negative effect on him as well, I'd say. But he's not very good. So, Tyler, I'll give you that.
Luke, before you continue, I have a question real quick.
Sure.
Is the kid actor the same kid that's in Good Boys?
No.
It's not. Okay.
No, the kid actor in Good Boys is Jacob Tremblay. And
he's really good.
He's a really good actor. Yeah, he's great.
That's the one who was in Dr. Sleep, right?
Yeah, he was in Dr. Sleep. And then if you all have seen Room with Brie Larson that came out several years ago, he plays the son in that, and he's amazing in that too.
Okay.
He's a really good actor.
And Luke, yeah. I'm going to ask you a question as well before you get too far. So your whole thing is that you can't judge a movie by its child actors, right?
Right.
But from a casting standpoint, if you have a movie in which your main character is going to be played by a child actor, shouldn't you expect a certain quality of performance from that child actor? Like, for me, I can excuse like a bad performance from like a supporting child actor who's there for like maybe 5 minutes. But when you are so obviously cast to play a main role, I feel like you need to give a main role performance.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. To me, though, I mean, again, there's only a couple child actors that I can think of. I don't even know their names, but like Ray mentioned, the girl in Logan and Jacob Tremblay, who are really good. I think that he could have acted better, obviously, and they could have picked a different kid to play him. But I don't know. I stand by my argument.
I personally think that in our generation, we've seen a lot of good performances from kid actors.
Yes.
And Tyler's argument does fit well with the kid actor being the lead of this movie not being good. That is honestly a bit of a surprise to me.
And you know, I'm going to give you an example, right, of how to do a lead child actor well, and that is Jojo Rabbit. Like a movie literally that is starring a child actor, like that is the main character of the movie. And Taika Waititi, he does a fantastic job. Like I may be wrong, but I don't think that kid had ever acted before that movie. And Taika Waititi did a great job of guiding him to give a good performance.
Yeah,
and
a lot of it can be based on the relationship between the director and the kid actor.
Yeah, and that goes back to critique of the director. I feel like he didn't really know how to manage his movie set and how to handle his cast in like giving them good performances.
All right.
Luke, do you have anything?
Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I've got quite a bit, actually.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, your argument hasn't done much for me yet on the acting.
Yeah, so you guys pretty much got me on the on Brandon's actor. You know, he could have been better. The casting could have been better. Relationship with the director could have been better, which I feel is primarily a directing issue, but who knows? You know, who knows everything that happened behind the scenes? But I'll give you that. But I think that the other actors in the movie are fine. I think that Elizabeth Banks, I think she does fine with the material she's given. It's just that the material is so bad that it could slightly affect her performance. But I think it could have been much worse if you'd cast someone who wasn't as well known. I think getting Elizabeth Banks for the role was a very good decision by the creative team behind the movie. So I think that, you know, she was written poorly. We all agree. And Tyler even said she's really shady. She covers things up for Brandon, and I get it, you know, she's the mom and she doesn't want to believe these things, but the evidence is right in front of her. So, and she's just ignoring it. So she's very unlikable, but I don't think that's Elizabeth Banks' fault. I think she did the best that she could with the material. And Tyler mentioned the father. We have totally different opinions about him. David Denman is the actor who plays the father. If any of our listeners have watched The Office, he plays Roy Anderson in The Office, Pam's fiance before she ends up dating Jim. So that's kind of a fun little thing. This is the I hadn't watched The Office when I watched this movie, so that was the first thing that I'd seen him in. So that's kind of neat to see. But anyway, but I think that he does the best in the movie of any of the actors. I think that he kind of acts as the audience character. He sees all the signs that Brandon's evil, and he's trying to convince his wife of it. And I was on his side. I found myself totally agreeing with him, and he was the one that I related to the most.
Yeah, you know, look, I would agree with you there because, you know, while I've heard Tyler explaining the dad throughout the debate, he has seemed like a character that was there for the audience.
Okay. Exactly, so
that is a good argument.
Luke, I have a question for you before you get too far into it.
Okay.
Can you name for me a scene where one of the individual actors stood out because of their performance?
Oh, yeah.
Which one?
I think that David Denman, as the father, stood out on the scene where they go out into the woods under the, you know, he's pretending that he's taking Brandon hunting, but he's actually going there to kill him. He's actually going to kill Brandon. So he brings the rifle out there and shoots Brandon in the back of the head. And I can really see, I personally think you'd probably disagree, but I can definitely see the pain on his face when having to do this. You know, he knows that it needs to be done and that his son's evil and out of control, but he still loves him in a way. You know, he's raised this kid, you know what I mean? And he also sells the emotion well after he shoots the gun and it bounces off of him because Superman, evil, you know, bulletproof kind of deal. Superman's obviously bulletproof, so Brandon is. And he turns around and his sadness instantly turns to shock. And he's so freaked out. And I think he sells that really well. And as he's begging for Brandon not to kill him before Brandon shoots laser vision into his eyes and burns out his skull, which, yikes. You know, I think that he sells that emotion really well. You felt really bad for him. Since he was the only likable character in the movie, his death affected me a little bit. So I think that's a scene that the acting was pretty effective in.
But Luke, surely the ability for an actor to convey some sort of sadness when they're about to shoot their only son in the back of the head and then show some sort of emotion when they're about to be murdered by said son who they try to shoot in the head and the bullet bounced off, surely that's like the minimum you can expect from an actor.
Well, any actor can show emotion, but it's the fact that he sold me on it so well. And maybe that's because his character, like I said, was the only one who I thought was written likable, maybe caused me to feel a lot more sympathy for him. But no, I mean, any actor can show a semblance of emotion, but I think he sold it very well. I think he sold it better than most.
And you mentioned that where you said that he thought that Brandon was evil and he was trying to convince his wife of it.
Right.
You know, I'm just coming off of a rewatch of this movie. And that didn't really happen until, like, the latter half of the movie, where, like, after the uncle died was when the dad really started realizing it. Like, before that, he was just so passive of a character. He really didn't affect the story at all for me.
Well, I don't know. I don't think that's true. I think he was very, like, you know, he didn't fully know what was going on. He didn't think he was evil before, but I think he definitely knew something was amiss. Like, you know, they, for those who haven't seen the movie, the family raises chickens because they live on a farm, and he finds all of his chickens slaughtered one night. And he obviously knows, you can tell just by looking at him. He doesn't explicitly say it, but he knows that it wasn't a wolf or something like that that could have gotten to the pen. Because the door was ripped off, and Elizabeth Banks is just so sure it's a wolf, which I don't know how a wolf rips the door off the wall. I hate her character, but I've talked about her enough. She's the worst. But I think that he obviously, you know, it's pretty easy to tell that he obviously suspects Brandon had something to do with it. And So there's, he's a little uneasy throughout the movie, and he could have been shown more, but again, he was the only one that, he still wasn't written very well because the writing isn't good, but he was the only character who was believable in the sense that he knew something was up. Yeah. Elizabeth Banks completely ignored all the signs. So yeah, he didn't explicitly try to convince her he was evil until near the end, but I think he knew something was up throughout the whole movie, and I think there's little traces of that throughout.
And do you think that he as an actor did a good job of like showing that distrust of his child like during the movie?
I do, personally.
I disagree, but okay.
All right. Well, go ahead and add what you need to add, Lucas.
Just a couple more things real quick. Okay. Some of the supporting cast were, not really that great. They were okay. We've talked about his uncle being killed and his jaw falling off, but that actor, Matt Jones, for anybody who's seen Breaking Bad, Breaking Bad's one of my favorite shows. It might be my favorite TV show. He plays Badger in that show. So it was pretty neat to see him in a movie. I didn't know he was in it. He did an okay job. I mean, he's an all right actor. He's pretty funny. He tries to provide some comic relief, but it didn't really work. But that's a writing problem.
I remember Badger. He was a funny character in Breaking Bad, too.
Oh, he was super funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then last thing, I think that the young actress who plays the girl that we mentioned, who Brandon, mangles her hand and was stalking, I actually think that she did a pretty good job.
Really?
Yeah, I thought so. I thought she did good. I think she sold a lot of the emotions. You obviously felt really bad for her because it's a horrific situation, but I thought she sold that emotion pretty well. So I thought she did a pretty good job too. She was probably the only child actor who did a good job in it, I'd say.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up round three. All of our rounds are now finished. The two will now end the debate with a closing argument, and I will let you two decide who goes first this time.
Luke, you can start.
Okay, I'll start. So the writing in this movie is obviously lacking. For me, the biggest problem is that, how I've stated several times, the premise wasn't taken full advantage of. But I think as a straight horror movie, it's just gory and you can kind of switch your brain off. I think it can be enjoyable, and it's neat to see someone with Superman-like powers brutally murdering people, as dark as that sounds. You know what I mean? I mean, the action's good and entertaining. So I think that as a straight horror movie, it works pretty well and it can be enjoyable and you can go see it and be surprised by the gore and have like a fun time in a horror movie, But I think the movie should have been so much more than that. And I think that the writing was very poor. They got a director in there who was, I don't want to say too much about the guy, but because he's only made one other movie, but not the best director. The writing was bad. The acting of the main character sadly sunk some of the scenes in the movie for me, a lot of the movie for me, actually. But so I think that the movie, if I was to give it a grade, maybe on like an A to F scale, I'd give it like a C, maybe a C minus, I think it's fine. I think it's enjoyable as a horror movie.
Tyler would give it an F.
Straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Straight up.
So I think it's enjoyable, but the premise should have been so much more. It could have been so much better, and it's frustrating. But I think it's an okay movie. That's all I have to say.
All right. Closing argument from Tyler. Let's hear it.
Okay. So Luke's closing argument revolves a lot around it being a movie that you can just shut your brain off to and just kind of watch it. To me, I don't really see that capability in this movie, if I'm being completely honest. Like, there are much better background noise movies. And to me, that's all this movie is. It is, like, if you want some background noise, you might turn Brightburn on. Like, it is not a movie that I see people willingly want to go rewatch. I think that, as a whole, Brightburn tells the story, for anyone interested in filmmaking, of the dangers of bad pre-production phase. I do not feel that enough effort or work went into the pre-production of this movie to make a finished product. I think that the writing needed to be edited again and reviewed by more people who chime in on more input. I think that a more experienced director who perhaps had more experience working with child actors especially needed to be picked for the movie. And I think that just better casting needed to be done for the actors. None of them really sold me on it. I think that at its core, Brightburn is a movie that had all the potential in the world to spawn a successful franchise of movies if they wanted it to go that route. And I think they did want it to go that route because the movie ends on a montage of like an Alex Jones type character going through and listing off all the different events in the world, kind of like the situation that plays out in the movie with like these super powered individuals kind of wreaking havoc on the world.
I was hoping you'd mention that. Sorry to interrupt, but I meant to mention the ending and how on the nose it is for sequels and spinoffs, but I just forgot to do it. But they're definitely trying to set up a universe that, since it failed at the box office, definitely isn't going to happen now.
Yeah, I remember someone telling me about the ending, and it honestly sounded like a cool ending to me.
You know, like, I mean, it's
like an ending. It's not like a happily ever after ending.
Yeah, like, it's an ending that, like, had the movie itself been better, definitely could have set up sequels, but I think that the movie, like, really underperformed what they were hoping for, so I don't think that happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the sequels definitely aren't going to happen from the numbers I've seen, but...
So my closing argument amounts to it being a movie that squandered all the potential that it had, and there are much better movies to watch if you want something mindless, and, like, if you want something in the superhero genre. Like, any of the MCU movies, even, like, the DC movies, like, even the worst ones, are better than this movie. And for me, it doesn't have a lot of rewatch value at all. I wouldn't even say it has much watching value at all.
Wow.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps up debate number one. I have chosen my winner. The winner of the overall debate is actually Tyler.
Okay. Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Luke. That's nothing against you. You had me at first. I'm not going to lie. You almost won. But I'll just let you know. So at the beginning, okay, in the opening argument, Luke had me when he was talking about the small budget and that I could just casually watch it with me being the casual viewer. So Luke had me there. But then when we started talking about the writing, I mean, it seemed like Luke was even siding with you, Tyler, on the writing, that it was terrible. So he won that round. But
yeah,
the directing was hardest round for me to pick. You guys both gave pretty good arguments into the directing. Luke, your arguments were good because you told me the scenes, like some specific scenes that I remember seeing in the trailer that, you know, looked good. But that, it wasn't enough for me there. Tyler just gave too many examples on how the directing was bad, so he won that round. And then, and the acting was also a good debate round. Luke, your main acting defense, I guess, for the movie was the dad.
Right.
And it just wasn't enough for me. Tyler just gave me too many examples of how the kid wasn't a good actor. There was no relationship between the kid and the director. The mother is just, I mean, it could be good that the mother is a hated character. That could be how she's designed. But the way you guys made her sound, both, even you sided with Tyler, that she's just terrible.
Right.
So he had to have won that round. And then the closing arguments was just really like repeated stuff from what you all had. So I guess closing argument would have went to Tyler as well.
Wait, okay. All right. So what I'm hearing is in debate number one, Brightburn, I took all rounds convincingly.
Not convincingly. Round two was tough.
But I took all the rounds.
Yeah, honestly, I don't think I'll ever watch it.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know what?
I'm sorry, Luke. You did give a very good debate. I just think you had a very bad movie to debate.
Right, yeah. And I, you know, if it was a movie I was a little bit more passionate about, maybe I would have done better. And me and Tyler, pretty much, it's kind of hard to win a debate when we agree about one of the three main items, because I think the writing's really bad too. But
yeah, I do think you will win some debates in the future, though, Luke.
I mean, that's the nature.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It definitely was.
I mean, that's the nature of a debate. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a tight race, but I mean,
yeah.
I respect the Tyler decision. He did a good job.
Speaking about passionate movies, me and Ray have a really good passionate movie debate coming next episode. We will be the debaters next episode, me and Ray. Luke will moderate. I think that'll be a really good episode. You can tune in for that one. I don't think I mentioned on the first episode, but these episodes will hopefully come out bi-weeklies on Fridays. They'll expand to several different platforms, you know, throughout the weekend, but normally Fridays is when they'll be initially posted. So with that, our first debate is done. I came out the rightful victor, if I say so myself. So we are going to move on to story time. You know, if you watch episode one, you will know this is a thing we do in these episodes where one of us tells a story that happened in our life. And this time I have a story for story time. And both of you heard this story, but the viewers have not.
It's a really good one. It's awesome.
But first, a quick word from our sponsor.
Okay, so welcome to Story Time with Tyler. So, Luke, Ray, you both know that I work at a grocery store.
Correct.
Yes. Aldi's.
Aldi, yes. During the COVID-19 pandemic, I got a job at a grocery store as opposed to taking my unemployment check, which would have earned me more money and I now regret.
Yeah.
But
but you know,
it's actually unemployment is actually a pain to deal with. You aren't missing out.
Yeah, I know. That's why I can't sit around and just take unemployment. I need to work. I'm that type of person. But yes, I took a job at a grocery store, and you know, at my grocery store, we have an occupancy limit on our building. You know, most places do at this point. And the way we enforced our occupancy limit is every person that was going inside had to take a shopping cart with them. You know, one person per cart. You know, it was an executive order by our governor, Andy Beshear, that, you know, it's only one person per cart, like, it's a recommendation. So my store decided we were going to follow that to a T.
And I think it's also worth noting, Tyler, that at Aldi, you do have to put a quarter into the cart to use it.
Yes,
right, yeah.
We unlocked all of our carts, so they didn't have to pay for them at all.
Oh, okay.
No. They were all unlocked. Don't get me wrong.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Does that make this story a little worse for you?
Yeah, it does.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So let me tell you, people do not like being told to take some shopping carts. You know, people were just got so angry about it. But there is one customer, and that happened a few days ago, that takes the cake. You know, I have almost 4 years in a customer service type environment, and this one is the worst customer I have ever had in my life. Let me tell you about it. So I was outside on cart duty, which means I was the one that had to tell everybody they had to take a shopping cart. And it's like 10 a.m. It is way too early to be dealing with this. Well, this redneck looking dude comes up to me and he tries to walk in, and I tell him that he needs to take a cart. And he says, no, I'll just go somewhere else. Which I say, okay, sorry about that. You have a nice day. And he begins to walk away. So for a split second, he thinks about doing the right thing. And then he turns back around and walks back up. So he does not.
Uh-oh.
And he's like, well, where does it say that at? So I point him to our window where it does say one person per cart. You must take a shopping cart to enter the building. We have an occupancy limit. And I'm going to censor this dialogue because it's a lot of cussing. And he says, well, you all can. He says, you all can print as many of those signs as you want. Like, show me the law. To which I point him to the executive order, also posted on the door, that recommends one person per cart. And then right. He says, like, oh, well, you're the only one making people take a cart. And I said, yes, sir, I'm aware of that, but this is how we enforce our occupancy limit. This is the easiest way we can do it. Like, you are more than welcome to go somewhere else if you don't like how we do things here. And he said, well, what if it happens if I just walk in the building without taking a shopping cart? I said, we will kick you out. He said, well, how are you going to kick me out? I said, you will be asked to leave by a manager. And he kind of just scoffs at me and says, oh, like, that'll do anything. And then I counter with, well, if you refuse to leave when asked, you will be escorted out of the building by the police because we are private property and can enforce whatever rules we want.
Right, yeah.
And then he just kind of brushes past and he just walks in the building anyway. So I come over the walkie and tell my manager that a dude just walked into the building that refused to take a shopping cart. And she comes and she tells him the same thing that I just told him. And he makes a big deal. He's shouting in her face. He's cussing her out in front of everybody in the store. He's making a fool of himself, basically. But he does leave. He does leave. And he comes back out. And who's out? Tyler's out. So Tyler has to deal with the wrath of this guy. And this next part is really not going to be any fun without all the cussing. But he calls me every name under the sun that he can think of. He's coming up with word combos I've never even heard of. He is calling me every single curse word, every name you can think of. He is an angry little redneck man. And but I don't think I told you guys, I am bigger than this guy. Like I'm bigger than this dude.
See, so, I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
I'm bigger than this guy by like several inches.
I assume that this guy was like a very large man.
No,
that's
no.
Funny. That makes it even funnier. No, like, I think that he's so tiny, like
Napoleon complex or something. But yeah, so and you know, I'm just kind of looking like, buddy, I don't care. I don't care. I do not care. I work at a grocery store. I do not care. It's like, you can go somewhere else. I do not care. And he calls me, you know, so many names. He kind of tires himself out because I'm not giving him anything to work with. And I should mention that throughout this entire thing, I do not move an inch forward or backwards. because I am not.
Little guy just had to tire himself out a little bit, didn't he?
He did. I'm not intimidated by this dude at all. Well, he walks away again. So for another time, he thinks about doing the right thing. And then he turns back around for the second time. And this time he marches right up in my face. And he is like, come up on me again. I will knock you out. Come up on me again. I will knock you out. I just look at him and I'm like, I have not moved from this position. Like, you are the one that came back. He's like, try me. I will knock you out. Try me. I basically looked at him. I can't even remember what the full thing I said was, but it basically amounted to, all right, I'm here. Put up or shut up. Like, you want to hit me? Let's go. I will go right here. Yeah, he walked away. He did. He was a little insecure, man. But yes, so that is that's my story time of the week. The time I almost got beat up over a shopping cart at a grocery store.
The time Tyler squared up with a little redneck man in the middle of Aldi grocery store.
Okay, but yeah, that brings episode 2 of the Cinebros podcast to a close. You can follow us on social media at Cinebros P on Twitter, Cinebros Podcast on Facebook, Cinebros Podcast on Instagram. We have our own subreddit if you are on Reddit at Cinebros Podcast. Yeah. You two have anything else to say before we end the episode?
Not really.
Thank you for all the support on the first episode.
We appreciate it.
Looking forward to many more.
Yeah, no, first episode, you really got, I think we're sitting at like 150 listens at the moment, and it's only been up like 4 days or 5 days.
Wow.
Yeah, we have listeners from, you know, Kentucky, which is where we are. We have District of Columbia, Illinois, Florida, Texas, North Carolina. Yeah, we're doing pretty well for ourselves.
Let us know if there is anything you would like for us to talk about on the podcast in the comments.
Yes, absolutely.
We're always open to ideas.